you, as an industry, and the people in this room really seem to be very positive. But I'm here to tell you the 85% of the market that you're not reaching is not thinking the same way you do. As a matter of fact, most Americans don't think the same way you do. If you look at the research, the achievement of something positive and the avoidance of pain are not the same. They don't count the same. Most people, the avoidance of negativity has far more value than the achievement of something positive. Let's take a look at how most Americans invest in the stock market. They put their money in the stock market too late. When do they put their stock market money in the stock market? They put their money in the stock market when the stock market has been gone up for about a year. And what's their motivation? Because they think they're going to get more money, or they're afraid to miss out on the growth? It's fear. They put their money in because they're afraid to miss out on the growth. So they get into the stock market because of fear of avoiding something. Not the positive hope of gaining something, but the fear of avoiding something. And then what happens, as inevitably it always does, the stock market goes down. The professional investors stay for the ride, and the amateurs get frightened, and their fear of losing money trumps what they know in their heart is, this is a cycle and it's not the end of the world. They all know this in their heads, but they don't do it anyway. Which is why the vast majority of Americans continuously lose money when they invest in the stock market. It's no different in your business. The fear of avoidance, the fear of pain, is more important than the achievement of some gain sometime in the distant future. Let me give you an example. I'm going to make it real personal, since this is the conversations, productive conversations. I was a smoker, about a pack a day smoker. I read all the stuff about smoking and cancer. I know that's a bad thing to do. And I knew that it is important that I stop smoking. It's also not urgent that I stop smoking. And all the materials and all the urgencies and all the things my wife would say, it just did not do any good at all. So one day I said to myself, how do I take this and transfer this from important but not urgent to important and urgent? Number one. Two, how do I work with my innate fear of avoiding loss, which is stronger than the achievement of positive gain? How do I do that? I said, very simple. There's something about me you probably don't know. I'm a cheap bastard. And I said, I am giving myself permission to smoke as many cigarettes as I possibly can. I'm not going to deny myself the pleasure of a cigarette. But I'm going to set a penalty for me that I will impose on myself. And here's the penalty. I could only smoke a cigarette so long as a dollar bill is burning. And I had to do it while kneeling in front of a toilet bowl because I'm... So I had this urge for a cigarette. So I had to kneel in front of a toilet bowl. I got the cigarette in my mouth. I got another match. I'm lighting a dollar bill while smoking. And then I say, what the hell is this? This is so dumb. And that was the last cigarette I ever had for 30 years. Cool. The avoidance of pain, I made it important and urgent. Here's another thing I did. I was working for my doctoral thesis. If I become a doctor, all sorts of positive things are going to happen for me. A whole new career investors, whole new career opportunities. It's important for me to finish my doctoral thesis. I've spent 6 years working on this damn thing. It's important. Is it urgent? No, because there's so many distractions that actually are more interesting that take me away from doing my doctoral thesis. Does this sound familiar to anybody when you're working with your members? So what I did is I gave myself permission to set up a contingency. I did the following. I said to myself, I'm going to make a list of the professional associations that I despise the most, that I do not want to be associated with. And the top of the list is the American Nazi Party. The Ku Klux Klan comes second. There's a whole bunch of other organizations that come down the list. And I said, I'm going to set some goals for completion of chapters. And if I fail to meet the chapter goals, I'm going to set a $50 contribution to the American Nazi Party in my name. Now, and that would have two very negative consequences for me. The first consequence is I pay $50 to the American Nazi Party, which I would rather burn the money than give them the money. The second, even worse consequence is I'm going to be on their membership list. Can you imagine the mailings I'm going to get? So what happened? I set a date. I missed the chapter deadlines. I said, I have to do what I promised myself I would do. I sent a $50 check to the American Nazi Party. Within a month, I was inundated with all this trash, and I was getting phone calls. It was very negative. But it was very positive because I had turned something from important but not urgent to important and urgent. I gave myself permission to do that. And the trick is, are there things that you could do in your clubs with the permission of your members to transfer what's important but not urgent into something that's important but not urgent? For example, one of the things you could do with the permission of the member is to say, we're going to take $200 of your money and we're going to put it in a separate account. It is not going to be our money. It is your money. It is your money. And with your permission, you give us the names of the organizations you despise. And we're going to set some goals. And maybe the goals might be attendance goals. Just something that can be achievable. So that if you meet the goals, the money sits there, and at the end of the year, you're going to get back the money. It's your money. It's your money. You're not giving us the money, it's your money. So at the end of 12 months, you will get back the money. On the other hand, if you don't meet the goal that you set, we're going to donate $50 to the American Nazi Party in your name. And again, with me, I got my doctorate this way. I stopped smoking this way. It's the issue of the avoidance of pain is more important than the positive things about feeling happy, feeling healthy. I wish people were different. I wish I was more like you, but I'm not. I think more people are like me. And again, I think the research would indicate that more people are like me. This is what we're going to try to do this morning. We're going to talk about some other techniques to rapidly bond with new and existing members and improve your club retention. Now, what I'd like to do is I'd like to get a volunteer for a role play. And this is not going to be, you're going to portray yourself as a new member to my club. So I'm going to ask you a series of questions. Do I have a volunteer in the audience? Okay, great. Can I have your name?
Phil.
Phil, thank you very much. Phil, where are you from?
Oregon.
Okay, Oregon. Where in Oregon, Phil?
Salem.
Okay, so Phil, what I'd like you to do is take the role of a new member in the club. And what do you do in the club?
I'm the member services director.
So I'm going to be a member services director.
Okay.
Or I could be a trainer. And what I'm going to try to do is to rapidly bond with you. So I'm going to ask you a series of questions, Phil.
Fair enough.
And the others might want to take some notes. So Phil, here's the first question. Phil, I want this to be a good experience for you. And what could I do as a trainer? What could I say as a trainer that Phil would be positive for you, that would really motivate you? What could I do or say? And do you mind if I take notes, Phil? Okay, so I'm going to take notes. So Phil, what could I do or say that would be positive for you?
Depends on what we're doing.
Let's say we're doing cycling.
Okay. You just encourage me to keep going.
Okay.
You could tell me what a good job I am doing.
Okay.
Those would help.
Okay, so encourage you to keep going. Okay, fine. Now, next question is, what could I say or what could I do that would be negative, that would really be a turnoff for you?
You could ridicule. You could insult. You could say that that would probably motivate me even more. Because if you said that, I knew you couldn't do it, or I knew you weren't strong enough, or something like that. That would be something that would.
Well, Phil, you've just now got to the third one. I want this to be a positive relationship, so I only want to do things with your permission. Are there certain things that it's really okay if I did, but you probably think I don't want you to do it? In other words, ridiculing you and saying, I don't think you could do this. I think this is too tough for you. Mm-hmm. I would not normally say that because some people might find that insulting. But you're telling me, Phil, that for you that's actually motivating and it's challenging. And that gets into the oh yeah kind of thing for you.
Yeah.
You're competitive.
Yeah.
So will you give me permission to say that to you?
Sure.
Okay, so I have your permission to slightly ridicule you and challenge you and say you can't do this.
Yeah.
Okay. Is there anything else that you probably think that a guy like me probably wouldn't say, wouldn't do to you, but actually would actually be motivating if I did?
Can you give me an example?
You just did.
Yeah.
Normally I wouldn't ridicule somebody, but you're giving me permission to do that because it'll help you.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
No, that might be as far as I'd be willing to go.
That's fine.
What if he yells at you?
Oh yeah, I could take yelling. I mean, I think that kind of goes with that whole, telling somebody that they can't do it or they're not good enough, or I mean, you can do it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
the girl next to you and she's doing it better than you.
No offense.
That happens every day.
Now, do you see what we just did? I asked three levels of questions. The first level of question was, what would you like to see me affirmatively do? And I predicted what Phil would say. The second was, what affirmatively would you like me not to do, not to say, that would really be a demotivator? The surprise, and Phil came up with this himself, was, it's okay to ridicule me because that will challenge me. I would not have thought about that myself, but Phil gave me the idea. Notice I also used the word permission. I used the word permission over and over again. So I'm saying, you're in control of this relationship. I'm here to serve you. You're giving me permission to ridicule you because it's going to help motivate you. And so I'm always letting Phil know you're in control. I'm doing this with your permission. Do you see the words? Do stop permission. Do stop permission is what we call the How to Manage Me manual. And one of the themes is that when you've got a new member, or maybe even an existing member, What you want to do is to create a how to manage me manual. And again, I said, Phil, do you mind if I take notes? Again, that symbolizes this is important. Now, what I would do after the conversation with Phil is I would then go into my... I use a BlackBerry. Most of you use an iPhone, and I would put his name in, and then I would put under the notes, I would put here's the do's, here's the permissions, and here's the stops, so that when I think about Phil, I could just go to my BlackBerry and kind of say, okay, here's he wants me to push him, ridicule him. Fine, I can do that. Do, stop, permission. Now, how did this come about? I do coaching with leaders. And one day, I was working with the CEO of a hospital. And he was late for a meeting, and I was in his sitting alone in his office. And I just bought a new telephone, which happened to be a BlackBerry. And I was reading the manual. And the CEO walks in the office, and he sees me reading the BlackBerry manual. And he says, Larry, why are you reading this manual? Aren't you smart enough to figure out how to use a phone without one? I said, yeah, I'm smart enough to figure it out, but you know, the nice people at BlackBerry were kind enough to give me a manual so I don't have to guess. Now look at you. You just hired a vice president of quality, and that person's going to travel from California to Boston to work under you. They're going to go to your office, and essentially what you're going to say to that new VP of quality is, congratulations, welcome aboard to the team. Your success depends on your ability to manage me. Good luck. Wouldn't life be a lot simpler if you came equipped with a How to Manage Me manual? He said, well, that's a good idea. How do we create one? I said, simple. I'm going to interview you. The first is, what do you want subordinates to actually do? And so I wrote that down. Then, what do you want subordinates not to do that would really piss you off? And then finally, what about permissions? What do you think your subordinates don't want you to do, but you actually do want them to do? He says, oh, that's easy. And he told me a story. Here's the story about the permission. Here's the permission. Jesus Christ was a fabulous teacher. And he taught complex moral concepts in the form of simple stories. And that made him such a great teacher. I love to talk about stories as a way of illustrating complex management points. But that doesn't mean that I think I'm Jesus. Sometimes I will tell a story, and the story is boring. Sometimes I'll tell you a story, and I'll forget I told you the story before. Sometimes I'll tell you a story, and you don't really care about the story. It's a dumb story. If my stories are not getting to you, you have permission to interrupt me in the middle of a story and ask me to get to the point. I promise I will not be angry at you. I will not be mad. And if I ever am, you just wave this manual that I just created and where I gave you permission. Now, this turned out to be a big deal in this hospital. This guy, this president, wears a white coat. He's a doctor. Oops. Wow. Hello? Anyway, he wears a white coat. He's a doctor. Can you hear me?
Power of doctors.
Power of doctors. So he would tell the same story over and over again, and people would forget that he told the same, and he would forget it. But the employees, because of his title and stature, they would sit through the same story. He would leave the meeting thinking he'd done a good job, and the employees would leave the meeting feeling he'd wasted their time. So with the permission, we were able to stop a logjam. So in this concept, the concept of permission is terribly important. Just like with Phil and me, he gave me permission. Just like in the cigarette story, I gave myself permission to smoke as many cigarettes as I wanted. But I only put one contingency on it. It was important I give myself permission. Now, if any of you want to, there's an article about this concept in the Wall Street Journal. If any of you would like a copy of the Wall Street Journal article, just on a business card or just a slap a piece of paper, write Wall Street Journal and I'll send you a copy of the Wall Street Journal article. If any of you would like a copy of the New York Times article, which talks about the health club industry, just give me your business card with the word New York Times on it, and I'll be glad to send that to you. Any questions, comments, reactions to this? Sir?
Why wouldn't you do like a response after he does, you know, after you do the do? Like if he says, okay, I want you to do this, and then you say, great. You know, so you sound excited about it.
Oh, sure, absolutely. In my interaction with Phil, I thought I did say, great, good, I'll do that.
Okay.
Yeah, I would.
Okay, cool.
Sir?
Do you think it's important to lose weight and to be physically fit?
Yeah.
Why don't you use the same procedure to deal with that?
I haven't done it yet.
Why not?
They just haven't.
His
question is, if you think it's important to lose weight, why haven't you done it yet? And I just say, I haven't done it yet. I haven't decided yet to do it. Yes?
So if you can't summon the will to finish the chapter that you were working on,
yes?
Where do you find the will to submit the $50 to the American?
I think it's the issue about urgency. By transforming the chapter, the doctoral thesis is a long-term goal. Writing a check to the American Nazi Party is an immediate action. Somehow it meant more to make shorter focused goals and essentially negative as well. Now, Here's a picture of Sigmund Freud. And one of the things that Sigmund Freud talked about is the concept of transference. Anybody know what transference is? It's essentially when you are with an authority figure, you transfer your parental conflicts to that new authority figure. Now, Freud thought this was so important and that he wanted to manipulate the transference. And so what he did in psychoanalysis, he had a couch. And the patient would lie on the couch so that the patient could not see the therapist. And the therapist would sit at the head of the couch so that the patient at no time could hear the therapist, see the therapist. And the therapist would actually not say all that much, but go, mm-hmm, uh-huh, tell me more. And that this would create the transference where the patient would get angry, sad, happy, manipulative, to put all this parental stuff to this authority figure. Well, what we know now is Freud was right and he was wrong. He was right that transference is a very important concept. He was wrong is that you don't need a couch and you don't need the invisible therapist. Anybody who's in a position of authority over you, you transfer a lot of the unresolved parental issues, anxieties, hatreds that you had with your parents to that figure. And it doesn't require a couch. So for those of you who are coaches, you may find that people are behaving in a kind of a weird way. They get angry at you and you don't know why they're getting angry at you, or they're being too hard to please you, when you say, I thought you're here for yourself, not for me. Or you may find them passive aggressive. That's the more likely thing that you're going to get. Passive aggressive behavior. In other words, they say they're going to do something and then they actually don't do it. Again, Freud talked about transference, and since you have authority figures, how do you deal with transference? Because it's an important issue in your business. How do you disable transference? Here's the master. Here's the master. How many recognize his face? How many of you don't? Okay. Name is Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers. He lived in Pittsburgh, and he operated a television show for a number of years. I don't know if it's still on anymore. But Fred Rogers really had this way of relating to people that was super. And part of the reason it was so super, it was genuine. The first thing is he said, "You are special." How many of you remember Fred Rogers singing, "You are special"? How many of you remember when Fred Rogers would look at the camera and say, "You're special"? He's really talking to you. You know in your head he's talking to millions of kids, but no, he's really talking to you. And he had this ability to say, "You're special." We all want to feel special. And the more you can engage in Mr. Rogers' techniques to make people feel special. Let me give you an example. A piece of equipment that I would urge every health club to have is these name tags at the front door. And instead of all of this stuff, just the first name in big, big type. And then every time you walk in the health club and sign up, you get this and you wear this. And you justify it by saying, not only is it important that your trainer know your name, it's important that the people you're training with know who you are as well. Because you're important. And so wear that. And so during the training program, the trainer can actually call somebody by their name. I had a situation at Suffolk University. My evaluations were going down. And I would say, why is that? So what I did was, I think that people don't think I'm treating them special. So I got these blue tent cards. These are cardboard things. And I said on the first day of class, I want you to write your name on the front and back and bring it with you to every class. And yes, it helps me to get to know your name, but it's also important that your class peers know who you are as well. And every day that I would have a class, I said, does everybody have their blue tent card? If you don't, I've got plenty more. So they all would have the blue tent cards. And every time somebody would make a comment, I would say, well, Fred, you know, well, John, what do you think? And I would call them by name. I'm reading the tent card. When I got to the performance of appraisals, my appraisals went up by 30%. And one of the reasons was I cared about them and I took the trouble to know their name. I just used a gimmick of a card, but they forgot I was reading the card. I don't know why, but if people get in the habit of, they just wear this. How many of you have churches? When you walk in the church, the first thing is you see in the church, you put the name tags on. My church has that. How about your churches? Anybody have a church like that? No? Okay. But I would suggest you get things like this, big letters with somebody's name, so everybody gets called the name, because people want to feel that they are special. Again, when you're a trainer, ask people, tell me about yourself. It's important for me to get to know you. Let's sit down. I want to get to know you. Make people feel that they are special. How many of you heard of Warren Buffett? Okay, Warren Buffett is probably the first or second richest man in the world. He's the president and CEO, chairman of the board of Berkshire Hathaway. He's one of the most fabulous investors in history. And Warren Buffett once said, "Tell me who your heroes are and I'll tell you what kind of person you will become." If you want to get to know your club members, ask them, who are your heroes? And why were they your heroes? Because that gives you a key to what's leveraging them. Now again, if I knew, let's say, George Washington was a hero, and I knew that you've given me permission to ridicule you, you know, I might say, George Washington wouldn't give up. Again, make people feel that they are special. And again, you know, thanks to Blackberries and iPhones these days, you can write all this information that doesn't cost you anything, and it's very easily retrieved. So it's a very leverageable technique. This is, you know, essentially what many of you are operating on in the positive end of the world. How would your life change? You are in the life-changing business. I think that's probably what Ken said, and you are. And some of the techniques that I am talking about are simply designed to help you communicate with people like me so that you can help them change their lives. Again, we talked about this. Any questions? Again, the more you can say, "I'm so proud of you." That's another Fred Rogers theme. How many of you remember hearing Fred Rogers say, "I'm proud of you"? Anybody raise your hand if you've... Okay. We all want to feel that someone's proud of us. Every trainer is an authority figure. Every trainer has some... There's some transference going on. Your people don't want to hear, "I'm proud of you as a group." No, "I'm proud of you, Jane. I know that you worked really hard at this. I'm proud of you." They want to feel special. Again, and I'm proud of you for sitting through this talk. If I can be of any help, if you want to bounce ideas, that's my phone number, that's my email. Any questions? Well, thank you for sitting through this. Yes, sir?
Obviously, a lot of people do a lot of cold calling, hot calling, and stuff like that.
Yep.
What are some urgent questions that would help get people in the club faster?
When you do cold calling, are you talking about individuals or companies?
Individuals.
Or both?
Well, yeah, it's pretty much everybody, but...
I don't play in the B to C space. So in terms of what I would say to an individual, I don't know. On a company space, what I as an association would do is first focus on the 100 companies that are on the list of the best companies to work for in America. It's called the Fortune 100. You can Google it yourself and get that list. Best companies to work for in the United States. Find out which of those companies provide financial aid for employees to go to health clubs. Or wellness programs. Probably many of them do. But those that don't, those would be the ones that I would be calling in my communities. You know, you're on the Fortune 100 list. I assume you want to stay on the Fortune 100 list. Did you know that some of your competitors on the list are offering this and you're not? People want to be healthy. Once you've done that, then go after the next companies, the Fortune 500. Again, the issue is about urgency and importance. For the HR person, remaining on the Fortune 100 list is a career issue, and that's important to them. Having healthy employees is important but not urgent.
Yes.
How do you get the urgency?
So what would someone ask you personally that would, you know, motivate you to get into the gym, since you're like the 85% of the people that we, you know, are targeting?
Okay, what would motivate me would be research that you could provide me that says that fat people are discriminated against in jobs.
Stop with airlines.
Okay. And fat people, and that if I continue to keep my weight, I'm going to lose business to my less my better fit competitors. That would get to me. That's important and urgent. I am competitive. Basically, I'm competitive in business. I don't care what I look like. And if that's going to affect my business, then I care. But in terms of avoiding cancer, heart attack, you know, that's sometime in the future. I'm living right now. So that you asked about me?
Right.
Yeah.
What was the question?
The question is, what would motivate Larry Stibel? And I was saying, what would motivate Larry Stibel would be, you're giving me